You're listening to the British Baseball Podcast. Hello, baseball family. Matthew here with another interview with, said artist interview. It's because we've been interviewing artists for the Negro League all week. Richard, are you an artist?
If only, no, I'm not. I'm terrible.
No after potatoes with some stars cut into it?
No, definitely not. I probably missed the paper.
See, now, Richard said that I should introduce him as the slowest left-handed pitcher in the NBL. But now I'm going to introduce you as not a potato artist. And I'm not even going to go back and record this intro. So Richard Chesterton of the Essex Redbacks, formerly of the Essex Arrows, is my special guest today. And I actually met Richard down at the Battle for Britain. It'll be a couple of weeks ago now, at the end of September in 2020. And we had a really good chat. And I asked him to come on the show, and he politely agreed to do so because he had a really interesting story to tell. And I'm really happy that he's agreed to come on and share with you the British baseball community and the wider global audience. So, Richard, how are we?
Fine, thank you. I'm drinking lots of coffee, so I'm ready to go. I have two kids, so I'm ready to go now for coffee.
Excellent. All right, so let's crack open the wagon wheels and get into this discussion. So, Richard, do you want to tell us a bit about your family background and how you got interested in baseball?
Well, I didn't really have a choice. So, I was born into baseball. I know it's kind of rare because quite a lot of people come into it a bit late, like in their 20s when they're adults and stuff. But my father was, most people probably either they recognize the name or if they played in the South, they remember him probably screaming at them, shouting at the umpire, or, you know, objecting to something with righteous indignation. But he was manager of the Arrows for 30 years. And so I was born into it. I was born in the middle of the season. I was born into a second division playoff, which my father missed, which they lost, which they weren't happy with. And then I was 2 weeks old in my first game. So I didn't really have a choice. And I've been at the field pretty much every Sunday from 2 weeks old to till now.
I like how you've not given your age away up until now.
It's... My dad was kind of the reason my dad played is complete fluke. It's a complete fluke. So he went to I'm trying to get this right, okay, because I'm trying to remember. If he was here, I could ask him. Obviously, my dad sadly passed away in 2016, so he's not around to ask. He went to a grammar school. Thank you. He went to a grammar school in Redbridge. I believe it's called Buckhurst Hill. And he was born in 1946, so it's quite a long time ago. And they were messing around in the shed in the back of the school, and they found a bunch of gloves that the US Air Force had left after World War II. So they were like, these are really cool. What do we do with this stuff? You know, there's a couple of the bats, there were some balls. So they started playing with the stuff. But being at grammar school and probably being in the late 50s, the teachers immediately said, no, that's not cricket. You can't do that. It's not British. Took it away from them. Well, you know, the 60s generation were not impressed with being told what to do by their school teachers. So they immediately thought it was really cool. So they played it a lot. And eventually one of their teachers said, look, these guys are practicing every day. You've got to let them play. So my dad ended up playing on a team in his high school. And then, you know, spent about 20 years being a professional musician. Didn't play at all. And then found a team in Waltham Abbey. And that was before I was born. I think it was 1984. So that's 3 years before I was born.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you took me on a tour of the clubhouse when we were down there. And the gloves are still there, aren't they, in like a trophy cabinet?
They are, yeah. The gloves in the trophy cabinet. So there's three or two. One's a first baseman's mitt, which is quite funny because you can put your middle finger into it's weird, it's got like a middle web, so it's got like two pockets with a but don't put your finger in the middle, because if you do you can break your finger because it's where the ball lands. And yeah, then there's another really kind of like a stereotype old-fashioned 1940s glove, and they're both still there.
Did you ever find out who they belonged to?
No, because obviously the US Air Force were they were gone by that point. So no, we don't know who they belonged to. They've all got kind of signatures on them and stuff like that from whoever the player was. You know, like you get for example, I've got a Clayton Kershaw Wilson A2000. So if you looked at it closely, you could probably see who it is. I think my dad once had a Brooks Robinson bat, but that was later on. That's from the 70s. So without going back there to have a look, I wouldn't know. But it's now as dry from where I live. So I'll tell you at some point, but just not yet.
Oh, sorry. You said that you're pretty much born into baseball, your first game being at 2 weeks old. But what are your actual earliest baseball memories?
My earliest baseball memories were being very small, waiting for the game to finish so I could get onto the field. I was desperate to get onto the field, play catch with dad. And it was always in twilight because it was the end of the day. So it was that kind of orange glow kind of thing. And then being finally released to run onto the field with the red claw puffing up, running around the bases. You know. And then the next kind of memory from that is me arranging all of the bats and the helmets in a line because I was the bat boy in my little uniform, which my mother made for me, this tiny version of the club uniform. I still have it. I'm just waiting for my first to get old enough to wear it. That's my first couple of memories.
That's cool. I was going to ask you as well, like, how important baseball is in your life or what sort of role it's played in your life, but considering you've literally spoon-fed it since you were a baby up until now, do you ever freak out and think what your life could be like without baseball?
It would just be so different, and I would be so different. I remember once, she'll hate me for pointing this out, me and my wife had an argument when we were first going out. And I said, are you trying to make me quit baseball? And she said, if I made you quit baseball, you wouldn't be you. And that's kind of a description of what it's like. I wouldn't know who I was. It'd be so different because I wouldn't have spent every Sunday on the field. And then all the decisions I made as a young man growing up that shaped where I am now would have been completely different because I spent so much time, my parents spent so much money carting me around Europe and America playing that I just don't know what I would. I mean, there's other things in my life I love, but I have no idea what I would look like. Probably enormously fat because I think baseball's the only thing that's kept me from being morbidly obese, you know. I'm still winning that battle slowly, but
so you said then that you parents took you to Europe and America playing. Was that like through like trying to pursue it as a career, or was it through European competition?
Well, I always wanted to be a professional baseball player. I used to tell people from the age of 5, you know, when you used to have the career days at school, what do you want to be? I want to be a fireman. I want to be a nurse. Oh, I want to be a baseball player. No, you won't be that. No, I will. I used to tell everybody I would. And I was scouted for GB when I was 12. And then the first one I went on was Sweden in 2000. And then I went on tour with GB from then right up until the last one I went on was Prague, which I believe was 2015. So it was a long time. So it was a lot of that. You know, we go on like two or three tours a year sometimes. And then I eventually went to college. I went to community college in New York State. So, and that cost an absolute fortune. That cost basically inheritance. So but I was willing to do it. And so when I say it cost a lot of money, don't even ask. I tried to calculate it once and just started crying halfway through. It's just too much money.
Oh, I should have funding involved, but if Elliot, my little boy, starts to take interest, I'll start saving now.
Just take him to high school. All I would say is just don't let him go out too late. I was actually 20 when I made it to community college. It's too late. They need to know who you are before you get to college, just in my opinion. It's so hard to get noticed by a good school if you don't have, you know, you have no playing experience in America. Because, I mean, some of our guys have made it and some of our guys are so talented, they deserve to go as far as they possibly can. But it's just so hard. You don't get to play enough.
Yeah.
Once a week's not enough.
No. Have you got any other advice then for any youth that might be listening to it or any young prospects?
Apart from make sure you get to play in high school. However hard you think you work and work twice as hard because it won't be hard enough when you look back. That's definitely true. You got to work harder. I didn't work hard enough. But I didn't know that.
That's pretty sound. So what sort of drives you and motivates you now as a
baseball player?
Yeah.
What motivates me now? I love the game. I really hate losing. I absolutely loathe it. What motivates me is that the guys I'm playing with now, we're quite a tight group of guys, the Redbacks. We're really tight. And some of them haven't won a national championship yet, whether it's because I play AAA. And I said, you said I'm the slowest pitcher in the NBA. I mean, like, ever. I don't mean now. when you win a championship, it's such a great feeling, because even though you are warriors for the working day and you will go out, you know, to work, you still put in so much time. You put in so much effort and it's so much commitment. Your family have to agree to it, so they sacrifice as well. And I want some of the guys in the Redbacks that haven't actually won it yet to experience what it's like to get that final out. That really does motivate me to see some of those guys just once, even just once, would be amazing for them. So yeah, that's some of the definitely motivates me.
Yeah, that's cool. Speaking of your playing days, I know you're still playing at the moment, but what have been some of your highlights throughout your career?
Throwing a shutout against Sweden in my debut, 13. I threw a complete game shutout, 7-0. And then I had Pat Doyle. A lot of guys that played high level will know who Pat Doyle is. He was a major league scout. He walked over, shook my hand in front of my parents. That was a highlight. Definitely a highlight. I went to the European MLB Academy in Prague way back in its early days, but I got to be coached by the major league coaches and stuff, which was really cool. The Cult World Series, which I think was in 2001, which is like a lifetime ago now. But that was really cool, because that was in Lafayette, Indiana. And then my career highlight for me is throwing a complete game of national championship final and handing my dad the game ball, and we won the whole thing. That was without a doubt my favorite game ever. We won the game on double play, which was pretty cool. You couldn't get much tighter, because we were playing the Mets, and the Mets are always good. And you know, there's very rarely ever a time the Mets aren't good. And we had, it was a 5-4 game in the seventh. They had runners on first and third with one out, and we turned double play to win a game, which was, it's a shame they didn't YouTube them back then, because I'd like to watch that. I probably watch it every morning when I go up for breakfast, because I love that play so much.
Yeah, you can't beat a good double play.
Not to win a national championship, no.
No, indeed. Are there any pitches that you used to rely on?
Pitches? I used to rely on my fastball when it was. Usually I live on the outside. I mean, ask Gavin Marshall, because the guy just sits on the outside and smacks it into right field every time I face him. Thanks, Gavin. Because I throw a two-seam fastball most of the time, so it tails away from a right-handed hitter. And then I usually have a pretty good curveball, which is a good two-strike pitch. So between the two of them, but I've got a slider and a changeup. I say it's a slider, it's just a slow curveball. It doesn't dip as much. But it depends on what's working that day as well. Sometimes the changeup works, sometimes it does not work. So, you know, most of the time, though, it's the fastball.
That's cool. Did you ever get any, like, funny rules when you're playing, like fines for giving up like a 0-2 pitch or anything along those lines?
Did I ever get a fine? One time, the last time I went out to Prague with GB, we had Kangaroo Court, and I don't remember what I got fined for. All I know is that the entire team got so many fines. I think we bought 3 rounds with the money that everyone put in, because there were so many fines went in, and I probably can't tell you what any of them were for, because they were so bad. Have I ever done anything odd? I don't know about anything odd. I've had a crazy thing happen to me. I've never seen it before or after, and it was at Town Mead, so you probably know what I'm talking about. I was actually hitting. I wasn't pitching. It was against the Mets. I think if you asked Jonathan Crammond, he was there, you might remember it. Their pitcher threw the ball in, and I hit a line drive back at the pitcher, but it was quite low. And because the rubber at Town Mead is a big square one that you dig in, when the pitcher's been digging at it with his foot for a while, you get the block sideways as well as on top. The ball hit the block, bounced back, and the catcher caught it behind home plate. And everyone just, I mean, it went like, doof, doof. And everyone looked at each other and went, what do we do now? Because Darren Muller was umpiring that one when he, you know, obviously he retired, but he's British baseball legend, and he was umpiring it. And I don't remember what the call was. I just remember running down to first base, and the catcher threw it over the first baseman's head, probably out of shock, because he didn't know what he's doing. And I said, I've never seen that, ever. I've never, ever seen a ball come back harder than it went out.
Weird.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
So what was it called?
I think I was just safe at first. I think they called it, but I still don't know if it should be. I mean, that's a great question if anybody out there in the community knows what the answer is, because the rubber's only 60 foot 6 inches. It's not past first base and third, so it shouldn't necessarily be. You know, because if it hit the ground an inch in front and then rolled foul, it would be a foul ball, like a bunt that goes foul before first base. But I don't know what the rule is if it hit the rubber. It didn't hit anybody else. It didn't touch the pitcher, luckily, because it would have taken a hole out of him as well. Hit it hard. But I don't know. All I know is that at the time, I think I was safe at first. But I don't actually know what the call should have been.
There you go, baseball community. Let us know in the comments what you think the ruling should be on that one. I'm sure.
And if anyone's ever had it happen to them, because that's the first and last time. I've seen some crazy things. Hmm. I've seen three guys break their arm throwing a baseball. Every single one of them was a London Met. The weirdest, yeah, right? That bone as well. Not that one. We're not, they're right on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them was at Townmead, and then one was at Enfield, it was a London Capital. And another one was at London, and it was a London player. And they just, I don't know what pitch they were throwing, but it's so rare. And I've seen it three times.
That's mad.
Awful oxygen mask, ambulance, you know.
No thanks. I've seen some brutal things at Royal Derby, but yeah. Never seen like arms breaking, throwing above.
One of them was a spiral fracture, so like more than one break. But he actually played again. That guy played again. I don't think he pitched again, but he played again.
That's good.
It's incredible considering it.
Yeah, definitely. Can I take you back to something you mentioned before about the European coach, the MLB Europe in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
What was it like? To understand,
like, how does it differ between, like, yeah, over here coaching and over there?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So to try and put this in perspective, when I was 12, 13, we used to play against a team called Hemel, and they played in the gravel car park. And then we flew over to Prague, and I'm sure loads of guys in the community have played at this particular field in Prague, because it's a really, really nice field. Everyone plays. There's a couple of fields there, all floodlit. And we stayed in a 5-star hotel. It's the one and only time I've ever stayed in a 5-star. This didn't cost us any money, by the way. They sent us out there. Then they gave us all the equipment. So we had brand new, sponsored by Adidas. So brand new cleats, socks, stirrups, pants, belt, undershirt. You know, and I'm just kind of in awe. I don't know what's going on. Then Bruce Hurst, who is a Red Sox pitcher, he was the one that was a pitching coach. And if you look up who Bruce Hurst is, he was a really good pitcher, the Red Sox. The guy's thighs were the same size as my waist back then. And I wasn't fat. He was huge. I mean, he was just built. I think he just had Tommy John surgery, or just had some kind of arm surgery. And there was about four or five of us went out there, and he was incredible. And obviously, all the advice they gave us was amazing, and we got to hang out with them. They're all in the same hotel, so you'd eat breakfast, you know, eat dinner, ask them questions. What was it like to play with Clemens? You know, stuff like that. You know, I don't have any pictures of it because I was the idiot holding the camera for him, because I got quite close to Bruce because I'm left-handed and he's left-handed, and he taught me his pickoff move. And if you ever ask anybody in AAA South, I've used it mercilessly ever since, because I need it quite often. You know, give the occasional walk to pick them off. that ploy. But he's a really cool guy, and they were very, they were very allowing, considering they knew we didn't know much. So they had to build us from the ground up. But it amazing help to me in my career. Just that short week was amazing.
Would you say that Bruce is the coach that made the most impact to you as a player?
No, only because he didn't have enough time. He was a great coach. The coach I had the most impact was my dad, because we spent so much time together. The coach that had some of the most influence on me, well, Stefan Rapaglia. He deserves a mention because he got me to college in the United States. He was on his word. So he deserves a huge shout out. Liam Carroll, because later on in my GB career, I was playing with the Lions. That was the GB domestic team. And I got handed the game ball on the first ever game at Farnham Park, which I was very proud of. I started that game, got a win. So I owe him a lot. I know he's just left the GB program, but the mark he made was huge.
Yeah.
And then if there's any other coaches, I mean, Ryan Stevens, who was my pitching coach in the United States, was a great guy. Wish I'd done a bit better for him, really. But he was a really good coach, good guy. And yeah, he was funny and knew his stuff. I think he also coaches the Alpine Cowboys, who were an independent league team. And he really knows his stuff.
That's cool. Who are some of your favourite and most influential players then that you've met or played alongside?
In terms of like famous guys or just just guys I really like playing with?
Yeah.
I like, firstly, I just want to say I like everybody I play with on my team now. They're awesome. Brad demanded that I tell you we threw a no-hitter on our first ever game as a battery together. I just have to tell you that we did against Richmond 2 years ago. So yeah, there you go, Brad. You got your shout out. I played with I think it was Chetwynd. I played one GB game with Chetwynd. It was at Finsbury Park against Ireland. They made 15 errors behind us. I'm not kidding. It was 15. Probably the Finsbury hop had a lot to do with that. Do you know what the Finsbury hop is? Oh, okay. The Finsbury hop is what you call the really bad bounces that happen randomly at Finsbury Park. Okay. Any Met player will tell you they know exactly what that is. Sometimes it just bites you. They've worked so hard at the field, but it still happens. I think it's more of a myth now than anything else. But yeah, so he's a really cool guy. I like playing with him. I mean, a lot of these guys are catchers because I'm a pitcher. To a couple of guys that aren't, Jonathan Cramman's one of my favourites. We played together for GB quite a few times and we went out to Prague. And he's a guy that I know cares as much as I do about playing baseball and the way you play it. So me and him always got on really well, even though we play the same position at first base sometimes. He's annoyingly good hitter as well. Playing against him is a pain. Yeah. And then Gary Davison. I don't know if you know who Gary Davison is.
No.
Very, very good GB player. He was one of the guys, he was lucky enough to do that home run derby thing.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Gary have been playing against each other since our first ever games of baseball when we were 10. And I've got, Gary, I have video of that game. He had red and white pinstripe uniform sponsored by McDonald's on.
Oh, man.
So I'm looking forward to shaming him with that. Gary is now... Like I think he's a professional weightlifter, or he's a competition level weightlifter, which is huge.
Yeah.
But he's a great, great guy. I've got a lot of funny stories about, and quite a few of them involve him about GP.
Any clean ones you can share?
Plenty. Yes, Gary, I can share a couple of them. What I will say though is my kid is crying. One second.
Do me a favour, you have to go get him, won't you?
I can hold him. Say hello to my four-month-old.
Hello. See, this is too adorable. Right? Too adorable
to come. It's a family life for me. I went from playing in college to this.
Well, you've won.
Hmm?
But you've won now.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. I wouldn't change it for the world. Really,
but... Yeah.
Yeah. There it goes.
Ah, oh, there.
All right, so the first tour we went on was Sweden. And if you don't know this, Gary's deaf. Gary has hearing aids.
Okay.
And we were all staying in a great big, we all had bunks and stuff in one big place. And in the middle of the night, he just started hearing this very high-pitched whine, which obviously Gary's hearing aids, which he'd taken out. I think it was Michael Clark, who was another guy for GB back in the day, was above his bunk, jumped out and screamed in his face, "Gary, your hearing aids are whining." And he went, "Well, I can't hear him." "It's because you're deaf, Gary," shaking him. We're all dying. We thought it was really funny. Gary found it funny, to be fair to him. And then the other time was in Spain. We won a European championship in Pamplona, I think it was. I think it was Pamplona. And half the team got busted for going out celebrating the night we won it. And we were all like 17, so we probably shouldn't have been doing it. But Gary didn't get busted because Gary couldn't hold his drink. And I had to basically hold his hair back behind his head when he was in the toilet all night. And this is the big guy that lifts professionally now. So yeah, you might be big and tough, Gary, but I remember holding your head above that sink for about 4 hours. So I know where you come from.
That's friendship for you right there.
Oh no, he's a great guy. I mean, anyone would tell you Gary's a great guy. I'd do anything for him. Not that you need to, because the guy can hit the ball about 16 miles if you throw the ball over the plate. So
I can, though. He's built like a brick outhouse.
Not just that, he's a really good hitter. You know?
Yeah. That's cool. So what sort of legacy would you like to leave once you hang up your cleats?
I'll probably hang up my cleats the day I die, because I just don't know how to stop. A lot of guys in Britain will tell you it's a way of life. It really is. I mean, how do you stop something? How do you stop something you've been doing your whole life? And that for me is not even like an exaggeration. It's completely true. So what legacy would I like to leave? That I played hard, you know, all the ones I'd like to be respected more than liked. I don't, you know, being liked is fine, but if I wasn't respected, I'd be terrified. I'd like to win a couple more championships. I'm only 33. I'm not that old yet. I'm getting there. But.
Yeah, you still got plenty of gas in the tank.
Well, I want these guys to see me play. There he is. Look.
Hello.
Say hi, Oliver.
Hi, dude.
Thank you, darling.
This is gonna make some very interesting audio in the podcast.
Yeah.
Me making baby noises. It's like not what anyone wants to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I genuinely would like to see them to play alongside those two. I mean, that means I've got to play for at least 16 more years, which sounds. Probably hear my wife start crying in the next room to hear that. I'd like to see the red backs that I'm on now develop as a squad to go up to the NBL. But there are some issues with the NBL I have personally with the NBL, as the way it's set up. So these things are always changing every year. Every year the league changes. There'll be different teams in different leagues next year. So we just want to play and play hard. I mean, we got on tour every year. We have a great time. We're a great squad. So I have no intention of going anywhere except for being a Redback next year. Just hopefully we take it one step further and make it, you know, we did really well this year. We came, I think it was third. Mm-hmm. We've been improving our league position every year now for about 3 or 4 years. So the next thing is to get into the final.
Awesome. And hopefully I'll be able to see that with the shirt sponsor. For the podcast on the sleeve?
Yeah, you've been wearing that shirt. Like I said, the team are loving the fact you have those shirts. We think it's awesome. If we get any new caps or anything, I have to send you one out. We have a couple of grey ones, but we're not sure about them yet. Frankly, it's hard enough to afford the uniform as a player, let alone as a fan.
Yeah. Hey, I've got no issue with putting my hand in my pocket. I just got a Manchester one for the little one today. It's got the Saints on the side. That's their youth team.
That's nice.
So this is the little lads. He's a bit older. He's only three, but that'll fit his head now. He's huge.
A couple of guys are probably wondering why a Giants fan that I am is wearing a Cardinals cap, but it's for Gibson, who passed away, sadly. One of my idols. Him and Nolan Ryan are my idols, man. Gibson was incredibly competitive. Mm. And I ruffled a few feathers in my life being that competitive, but that's the guy I get it from. So I just thought I'd represent a little bit tonight.
That's cool. That is cool. I'm sort of getting towards the end of my questions now. So what I normally do at this point in the show is I sort of leave the door open to the guest for the final word. But before I do that, I would like to ask you, if you had one wish for British baseball, what would it be?
No, I know exactly what I'd like for this. I've always wanted this. I want one facility to be floodlit. And it's probably not a common answer to that question.
No.
But I think it would make a really big and cool difference. I really do. I've always wanted it to be Town Mead. It was me and my dad's dream to have it floodlit, probably because it matches the Field of Dreams field. But in the summer, I mean, the other thing is, I've always said this about there's not enough baseball played here as a young guy. If you want to be good, you have to play a lot, you know, especially if you're not a pitcher. Now, if you're a pitcher, you can play once every 5 days, and that's a starting pitcher. But if you're a position player, you need to see decent pitching more than once a week. It's just not enough. If there's a floodlit field, you can play in the evening, and it completely changes the dynamic. You know, and there's lots of guys here that will play in the week. Now, if it was a Wednesday night game and Sunday night, all of a sudden you're playing double the amount of league games. That's a really big deal. But of course, it takes a lot of money. But that's my one wish, is just to get one floodlit field. And it could be more than that, because it's just sitting there ready to go. It's already got the fully enclosed fences. So, you know, Finsbury probably can't do it because of where they are. You'd definitely do it at Farnham. But of course, it already costs an absolute fortune to rent it now. So imagine if it was floodlit. More than Abbey doesn't. So, yeah, that's the... Or maybe up north, even though the Trojans have got a great field. So have Hull. They've all got great fields. It doesn't have to be down south. I mean, the north often feel neglected, but we went and played Sheffield, and those guys are great. I'd happily play in the same division as them next year. Really, yeah. I'm very happy to say that Radcliffe was not there. Jamie Radcliffe, thank you for not being there, because if you'd been there, we would have had a tougher time against you.
Yeah, they're Sheffield a lot. The Bruins and the Blade Runners really getting well with both sets.
Yeah, I mean, they were missing both their pitchers, both their starting pitchers for the playoff game we played against them. Radcliffe's good in his own right, and I've known him for years. I went on tour with him to Prague with GB. He's a great guy. And the other guy, I think, is it Kevin McAdams' kid? Did you see him play the Battle of Britain? Is it Kyle, his name? Or Miles?
Miles, yeah.
Big guy, right? Yeah, he maybe looks stupid on three pitches. He's really good, so I'm very happy he wasn't there. Yeah, he's far too good. Far too good.
Yeah, those some good players. It was a great, really good tournament. Really enjoyed it. Such a great weekend.
The standard was way higher than I thought it would be, actually. It wasn't bad. Some of the best baseball we've played all year. So, I really enjoyed it too. Well done to John for putting that together.
Definitely. Especially with the last-minute changes, that took some play.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. No, he did pretty well. I'm going to try and organise a spring tournament this year as well. We did it a couple of times in the past. It was at Town Mead. We had teams come across from Holland, because we play in Holland every year. The Redbacks go out to Eindhoven.
Oh, cool.
Well, we didn't this year, obviously, because of what's going on. But the plan is that as long as COVID stops by next year, in April, we're going to try and have a spring tournament here. And then October, we'll go over to them.
Yeah. What's Dutch baseball like then? What's the fields like and the standard?
Dutch baseball is, as a standard, ridiculously high. Their fields are excellent. They're all nearly all as good as Farnham, or at least that level. And then the Dutch have got loads of players in the major leagues, and they are professional leagues there anyway, like Germany do. And so when you go and play there, it's like a fun tournament where there's a bit of drinking and you kind of relax at the end of the season. And then the guy will come on who's, I think one of them was wearing a sombrero. He was messing around and then just spotted 95 on the outside corner. I'm like, brilliant. Brilliant, great. This guy's messing around, throwing 90. It's like a chair leg up there because I'm not going to hit it.
Brilliant. And that's it. I'm done for today, Richard. This has been brilliant. Thanks so much again for coming on the green to do this. It was such a great chat. So the tradition of the show is that I leave the last word open to the guest. Richard, the floor is all yours. Any shout outs you want to give? Any parting advice? Anything you want to say?
Shout out. Shout out to the Redbacks for next year. Let's go and win this one. And then just shout out to all the guys I played GB with. I mean, the amount of effort, sacrifice we put into playing, you know, even as young guys, just so much respect for those guys. Love those guys. Very, very good memories. Hell of a way to spend a childhood.
Mm. Yeah, I can think of worse ways.
Yeah.
I probably did. All right, nice, Richard.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you much for your time. Really appreciate it. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, bye.
Take care, mate. Ta-ra.
And you, thanks.